Welcome to the Savory Podcast. In this episode, I wanted to share my thoughts about taxation, government, democracy, social welfare, and kind of break things down from an ethical standpoint. So I decided to make this episode after having a couple of kind of debates on Twitter recently, which got me thinking about these ideas. And I thought, while it's fresh in my mind, I'll make an episode about it and articulate some of my thoughts. But also I came across this really cool poem, which I think is by this guy Oz on Twitter, whose handle is I'm a Bear Hunter. Now, it may not be his original work, but I can't see it anywhere else, so I'll credit it to Oz, at least for the time being. But this just got me thinking about ideas of taxation, and especially how far we've come as a society and kind of sleepwalked into this paradigm of extreme collectivism and extreme taxation, and more concretely, extreme disregard for property rights. So I won't say any more. I'll let you listen to the episode itself. If you enjoy the episode, please do give it a share on social media. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, make sure you give it a 5-star review in whichever podcast app you're using. If you want to support the show, that'd be hugely appreciated. Links for doing that can be found in the description. Finally, as always, I want to remind you guys, if you're not already, go and listen to the podcast on the Fountain app. It really helps to support the show. You can stream stats as you listen, and I will read any boosts that you send me at the beginning of the episode. Like these one right here, we've got Piers with Free Samurai. Totally agree, Piers. What's happening to Samurai is totally unjust and is a very, very crucial issue. And there is an episode coming up very soon, which is going to go into that amongst other privacy issues. So stay tuned for that one. And thank you for those 100 sats, Piers. There's one here from Godsdeath. Thank you, sirs, with 337 sats. Thank you, Godsdeath. Another one from Piers. Thank you, gentlemen. 420 sats for that one. Thank you again, Piers. And another 420 sats from Piers on episode 74 with Tim Hinchcliffe. Cheers, Piers. Really appreciate you holding up this boost section. I really love getting these boosts and having the opportunity to read them out. So get yourselves on Fountain. Podcasting 2.0 is definitely the future of podcasting. All right, without further ado, let's get into the episode. Taxes land, taxes wage, taxes bed in which he lays. Taxes tractor, taxes mule, teach him taxes is the rule. Taxes cow, taxes goat, taxes pants, taxes coat. Taxes ties, taxes shirts, taxes work, taxes dirt. Taxes chew, taxes smoke, teach him taxes are no joke. Taxes car, taxes grass, tax the roads he must pass. Taxes food, taxes drink, tax him if he tries to think. Taxes sodas, taxes beers, if he cries, taxes tears. Taxes bills, taxes gas, taxes notes, taxes cash. Tax him good and let him know that after taxes, he has no dough. If he hollers, tax him more. Tax him until he's good and sore. Tax his coffin, tax his grave, tax the sod in which he lays. Put these words upon his tomb. Taxes drove me to my doom. And when he's gone, he won't relax. We'll still be after the inheritance tax. This is a really awesome poem that I came across recently by a guy on Twitter who goes by the name Oz. His handle is I'm a Bear Hunter. And I just wanted to use that as a springboard and to kind of set the scene for this episode, which is to talk about taxes and specifically whether taxes can be considered ethical or whether taxes are, in their essence, theft. So why do I want to do this episode? I guess the reason really is because I think there's this kind of common association. And this is actually something that I think I used to fall victim to myself, or I definitely used to fall victim to myself, which is that if you disagree with taxation, if you disagree with the government taking money from quote unquote the rich and giving it to people who are quote unquote less fortunate or whatever, that you are somehow evil or unethical and that you have ultimately bad intentions. Maybe people think you're selfish and these kind of things. And these accusations are still very common now. And just to go, I guess, over a bit of my own background, I remember quite distinctly a turning point for me when I started thinking about these topics a bit more deeply, which was during the infamous U-turn of the Lib Dems when they went into coalition with the Conservative government in the UK on student tuition fees. So I've kind of discussed this a few times on the podcast before, but when I was at university, I was definitely very left-wing and subscribed to a lot of socialist ideas. And at the time, I remember actually going to a protest, which was in London, which was a big protest against the raising of tuition fees in the UK from, I think it was £3,000 to £9,000 or something like that, which didn't actually affect me, but it was, I think, voted in during the time I was in uni. And I was very much against this. And I thought that I was kind of supporting a very strong principle. And I guess there was some kind of a principle there because, you know, I think that U-turns are generally wrong. You know, I mean, that's just kind of bad form generally, is that if you are not keeping a promise, and especially the Lib Dems had promised that, you know, that they're not going to raise tuition fees, and then they went ahead and did it. But in terms of whether that was actually justified on raising the fees in general. I remember at the time, I thought, well, no, that's fundamentally wrong. You know, tuition should not only be, you know, £3,000 a year or whatever it is, but it should actually be zero. You know, I genuinely believe that education should be free for all and all these kind of things. And I had a debate with my friend in the pub, and he was saying to me, you know, why are you against this? Why do you not think it's fair that tuition fees go up, etc.? And I think my answer to that question was, education is a right, not a privilege, which sounds great and virtuous and something that you would put on a placard and, you know, kind of roam around the streets and try to garner support for. But actually, when you break down that concept and that idea, it doesn't really hold up on a ethical basis. And I think that actually this moment for me marked probably my peak moment of socialism, or, you know, having socialist leaning ideas. So yeah, just starting from that point, why do I now think that that's completely incorrect? And I think the best place to start is, should anything truly be free? Is anything that is provided to you, which is an actual resource, which is something which costs something to produce, something to make, which costs either labor or resources or some form of capital, should that ever be given to someone for free? And I think the answer to that is no. And the way you have to test this really is by first principles. You know, I do talk a lot about first principles, and I always try to orientate my thinking towards them, because I think that if your ideas don't hold up to first principles, then there's something wrong in the idea. And the principle here at stake is that in the context of education, sticking with that for a moment, well, education costs labor. It costs, you know, there's people who have to lecture, there's people who have to teach, you know, the support staff, there's administrative staff and all these kind of things. And then there's also all kinds of other resources, you know, whether that's books and materials, computers, electronic equipment, rent for the buildings, all this kind of stuff. There's obviously a lot of money and resources that go into education. So should you just be given that for free? Well, when we talk about being given something for free, it's not really free. Someone's paying for it. And that is paid in the form of taxation. That's what something which, you know, the state says is free, you know, whether they say that healthcare is free or whether they say that education is free, that is being paid by someone. So then you have to ask, well, is that person who's paying for it, are they in a consensual or non-consensual agreement when it comes to that transaction? Do people pay taxes voluntarily? And here's where the conversation gets, I guess, a little bit more nuanced, because some people will say, well, yeah, of course, you vote in your government, right? You vote in your government, and therefore, when you're paying your taxes, you're paying taxes according to a government which has been voted on by the people. And we say, okay, everyone has come together and they have voted on this government, and this government has determined that education is going to be free and we're all going to pay it via taxes. Well, what if I individually did not vote for that government? What if I said, well, no, I didn't vote for this government. I didn't want to have to pay for this thing. Well, the answer from the status perspective, and I'm trying to be generous here to that perspective, I'm trying to steelman the argument, not strawman it, is, well, you're part of a society, you're part of a democratic system, and everyone's voted, and this is the government, and therefore you have to submit to it. So ultimately, the concept of taxation, it really comes down to, do you accept democracy as a system, right? If you accept democracy, then you accept that you have to fall in line with what everyone else says, with the majority opinion. But of course, this idea is completely problematic. Democracy is something which we've kind of been completely propagandized to accept as the best system and the only ethical system, and that its equal and opposite must be some kind of brutal dictatorship. But this is simply not the case. And again, going back to the first principle idea, if you have a tribe of people, and let's say you have 100 people in a tribe, and everyone has to go out and collect wood to build themselves a house, for example, right? So in this tribe, everyone's living in the forest and they're building a house out of wood, and everybody's going out and collecting wood. You might have, for example, let's say 20 or 30 or 40% of people who are extremely productive. They want to go out there, they want to collect a lot of wood, they want to do more work, and they want to create a good home for themselves. And they're putting their own effort in to achieve that. Well, it makes logical sense. It makes complete sense from an incentives point of view that the rest of the people would be incentivized to create a democratic system in order to distribute those goods, because that's the natural incentive. So you end up having, you know, the other 60% of people, let's say, who want to bring in a rule to say, well, no, let's pool our resources together. Let's all go and collect the wood, and then we can all put it together, and then we can all distribute the rewards. And that's wrong for two reasons. The first is that it's unfair on those people who wish to keep the rewards of their own labor. It's a fundamental wrong unto them, because they're being stolen from, because somebody has decreed that they have to give up those resources. And then it also doesn't work from a societal point of view, because the whole nature of that incentive structure means that everyone, therefore, is incentivized to do less work, including the productive members of that tribe. Because if all the resources are being pooled, then you don't want to be the one who's doing more work and giving to other people. You want to be doing, at best, the average, or better still, you want to be performing below the average. So you're actually doing less work and you're still getting more reward. But the statist, or the person who believes in democracy, they would say, well, that's fair, you know, because ultimately democracy cannot be reconciled with property rights. And again, this might be triggering to someone who hasn't really gone down this road, because they might just think, well, wait a second, like, you're putting property rights as something that we should defend and protect over and above democracy. Like, how can you do that? Democracy is obviously, you know, more important, and property rights are just some kind of capitalist ideal. But actually, the fact is, property rights underpin everything. Because without property rights, not only do you not have a system which can ever support meritocracy, the idea that people can rise to prominence or wealth or whatever other metric based upon their input, based upon their effort, based upon their achievement, but also you can't have any rights at all. And I was recently debating someone on Twitter because they were making the statement, taxation is not theft, and that people who say taxation is theft are missing a crucial aspect of it, which is that the taxation has come around through some kind of democratic means. I want to put aside two things for a minute. First is that you haven't necessarily individually voted for your government. And the second is you probably don't have an option to get rid of them completely. There probably is no black box that says, I don't want to be governed, thanks very much. But putting both those things aside, let's just use an extreme example here and say, well, what if people vote for someone to be killed? What if you have a society, and let's use an extreme example here. Let's say that there's 100 people in this tribe again, and 99 people in that tribe vote for one other person to be killed. Let's say they didn't like that person for whatever reason, and they all just voted and said, we're going to kill that person. Would that still be murder? And when you use this example to people who are status-minded, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, that's murder. You know, that doesn't count. Well, either democracy is valid or it's not valid. You can't pick and choose. You can't say, well, I don't like this thing, and therefore I'm going to reject that. Because either there is such a thing as right and wrong, or there's not. So the question becomes, is it possible to vote in something which is unethical? You may think, or one may think, that, well, taxation isn't that unethical. I'm okay with it. I'm okay that's come about through democratic means. But murder, no, that's of course unethical, and therefore I reject democracy on that particular point. But we've seen this through history. Many governments have been voted in and then have carried out atrocities. Does that mean that those atrocities are valid? I mean, as far as I'm aware, the Nazis, okay, fair enough, there is nuance to this point, but the Nazis were extremely well supported in Germany. They obtained power through democratic means. So does that mean that the things that they did were ethical? Well, of course not. Most people would outright reject it, and they say, oh, well, you know, there's propaganda and this and the other thing. Okay, well, propaganda worked on your population who is using democratic means to elect their government. Okay, so hopefully any reasonable person who's taking into consideration all of these things that I've talked about will come to the logical conclusion that democracy does not equal ethics. Okay, so then if you've already come to that point, if you accept that democracy does not equal ethics, if you accept that the outcomes of democracy can be challenged, well, then you have to come to another set of values of saying, well, what is objectively ethical? What is objectively reasonable? What are the individual rights, etc., that we should have? And this essentially brings me to something which I've landed on ultimately through thinking a lot about these ideas, which is that the only ethical outcome is anarchism. And I know that anarchism is a loaded term, because as soon as people think about anarchism, they think about people throwing Molotov cocktails around and stuff like that. But it doesn't mean that there's no rules. It just means that there's no rulers. It just means that there are certain principles in society that are adhered to, but there is no centralized authority who is capable of, in particular, violating those rules. So one of them, which we all accept, status and non-status alike, at least when it comes to law-abiding citizens, I know there's some nuance here when it comes to, you know, violent criminals, etc., is that we don't kill. Most people accept that. It's a fundamental principle. And most reasonable person, even who believes in democracy, would say, well, killing is wrong, as I demonstrated before. Well, the anarchist would say, not only is killing wrong, but stealing is also wrong. We also have a fundamental right to our property, and that should not be infringed on. Because the term property, that doesn't necessarily just mean, okay, I'm talking about my house, or I'm talking about my car or my belongings. No, that can also be your body. And this is something that is definitely a big topic in the past few years. And I'll try not to get lost on this point, because I have a habit of ranting when it comes to COVID stuff. But we saw in 2020 and 2021 and 2022, a complete infringement on bodily autonomy. And bodily autonomy is not separate from property rights. Your body is the property of yourself. Now, we always used to understand this, because before everyone lost their minds in 2020, we accepted without question that if you had a medical intervention performed on you against your consent, at least outside of very particular circumstances like extreme mental health issues and things like that, that this was a fundamental wrong. This was a fundamental human right. And of course, this is included in the Nuremberg Code, which was drawn up after World War II to protect people from forced medical experimentation and all the rest of it. So most people should have come at least that far. But actually what we realized in 2020 was that people were willing to give up this right as well, which is really just so fundamental, it kind of boggles the mind that people would ever even question that. I mean, once you give up on bodily autonomy as a concept within the context of human rights, there's no point in even having a conversation about your car. There's no point in having a conversation about your children, whether your children belong to you. I mean, if your body doesn't belong to you, how can your children belong to you? How can your car belong to you? Nothing really belongs to you, because the centerpiece, the kind of nucleus of property rights is, do I have rights over my own body? And the problem is with these kind of ethical questions is that if you haven't really gone down this rabbit hole, if you haven't thought deeply about these ethical principles, it's so easy to kind of trickle from one into the other. It's almost like trickle down economics, but it's kind of like trickle down bad ethics, right? Like you start with saying, okay, I believe in democracy and that everyone should be able to kind of vote to, you know, have higher levels of income tax for people who are not them so that they get a larger share of the pool or whatever it is. And then where you end up is that you say, we don't have any concept of even bodily autonomy because everything just becomes part of this goo of whatever is for the greatest good. And this is something that we heard a lot, you know, especially during COVID, was everything that was being advocated for, it was, oh, it's for the greater good. You know, you have to do this and the government has to force you to do this because it's for the greater good. And this mentality has kind of come so far now. You know, it's not just that people are saying, okay, you need to give a slightly higher tax rate or whatever for the greater good because we need to pay for kids to go to school or whatever, which in itself, and I'm going to tackle this in a minute, based upon the outcomes, whether there is any justification for taxation and these kind of things. But putting that aside for a second, we're at the point now where people are saying it's okay to violate people's bodily autonomy for the greater good. Once you're there, there's really nowhere else to go. And this is why 2020 marks such a kind of watershed moment when it comes to human ethics, because we've already reached rock bottom. Like, we reached it there. And once you've gone there, everything else becomes fair game. Okay, so I'll just zoom out again, because I know I've gone very deep into the weeds here. And I want to touch back on that point I said I'd come back to a minute ago, which is, well, what if we can observe the outcomes and a better society can actually be observed based upon a, let's call it generously, a flexible approach to property rights? And this would be the person who says, okay, you know, I don't want to take all of your stuff. I'm not going to go kind of full communist and, you know, seize all of the kind of means of production in society and hand it over to the government. But, you know, if you're earning more and you have more, you should be able to kind of pay for others and you should help others in society. And I wouldn't disagree with any of those points. I think there is a responsibility on everyone to be charitable. Like, this doesn't get away from that. And I will finish on that point at the end, actually. But we're not talking about charity here. We're not talking about doing good. We're talking about the government taking people's stuff and redistributing it towards, at best, democratically determined causes. Now, why is that wrong? Well, let's say there's two people living in society and they don't have any kids. They don't have any dependents. They're not putting anyone through education. They live healthily. They don't have any health ailments or anything like that. Should they have to pay for other people who have made completely different choices to themselves, which cost more money, which require more resources, but are decisions that they haven't taken? If someone decides they're going to eat incredibly unhealthily, and perhaps they're going to take part in dangerous activities, whatever it is, should that person be subsidized by someone who doesn't take those actions, who wants to live healthy, who doesn't put themselves into dangerous situations? I think the answer is no. And most people, when it comes to this question, they would say, okay, yeah, sure. When it comes to that kind of extreme comparing those two people, of course it makes sense that person shouldn't have to subsidize someone else. But essentially, if you hold that principle, if you hold that principle that you are responsible for your own actions and the things that you do and other people are responsible for the things that they do, if you have that principle whatsoever, then you can't have it halfway. You can't say, okay, well, I hold the principle if someone is being really, really unhealthy, but you know, if they decide to break their leg or whatever, doing an extreme sport, well, that should be socialized. Well, why should it? My view is that everybody is responsible for their own actions. They're not responsible for the actions of other people. And that when you have a society where everyone is responsible for everyone else, not only is it unfair, and this goes right back to the point that I made earlier, not only is it unfair on the people who want to be the most productive, who want to be the most healthy, who want to advance themselves and live the most productive life that they can live, but it also distorts a natural market signal, which emerges naturally, which dissuades people from doing some things and encourages them to do other things. And this gets into the final topic that I want to discuss before I round this off, which is that outside of the individual ethical concerns of all of these things, taxation and socialization ultimately distorts a very important signal that you have in society, which overall improves society. And this is something that I think is the most neglected aspect for people who have more status oriented views, who I am trying to be understanding with here, because I definitely used to count myself among those people. And I supported, you know, statism, I supported taxation, I supported all of these kind of concepts on the basis that society would improve as a result. Yes, I was lacking in fundamental principles, but at least there was a desire to have a positive outcome there. But the problem is the positive outcomes in society actually are incentivized against when you have socialization. So in almost every case, the signal from the market will align with what is best for the individual as well as the society. And the society benefits come as an extension of the individual benefits. So that's some additional nuance, but I won't get into that just now. But if you take all of these things, are you incentivized to eat healthily and exercise? Well, you are on an individual level because that's what you need to do for your health. But also the free market reflects that because there is a cost to being unhealthy. You're going to spend more money on healthcare costs. Now, when that market signal becomes abstracted away, well, then that changes the incentive for the individual. So if I don't have to pay for my medical bills, well, then I'm not going to have such a high concern for staying healthy. Of course, you could say, well, yeah, most people want to stay healthy anyway. And that is true. But obviously, financial incentives do play a part. I mean, you only have to imagine, hypothetically, what would happen if someone was paying you to be unhealthy. If someone said, hey, I'm going to give you an extra $1,000 a week, but you have to remain over 15 stone. Well, people would do it, right? People would do it because there is always a price that people would accept for something like that. And we do this all the time, right? I mean, you know, nobody likes to have to do a 16-hour workday. You know that that's bad for your health. You know, it's going to increase your cortisol levels. It's going to cause you more stress, all the rest of it. But you do it because you accept that the money that you're going to get from it is worth it. So we're always making these calculations. But the problem is through socialization, those market signals go away. They get distorted. And that distortion ripples out and affects individual choice, individual action. And so then the natural question to ask is, okay, well, what system incentivizes rational human action? And I would say that is pure capitalism or anarchism or voluntarism, whatever you want to call it. And actually, there's a word that I got from a guy who I heard on another podcast. I'm blanking on his name right now, but I don't think he'll be upset about this because I don't think that he was the one who started using this term. But the term is consensualism. I actually think that consensualism gets to the heart of what I'm talking about here more than any other word, because what I believe now about the principle that I believe should underpin all human organization is that all action in society should be consented to. And if you decide that you want to get together with a bunch of other completely consenting individuals who say, right, okay, we want to come together, we want to put our money together, and we want to have some kind of socialized whatever it is, you know, socialized healthcare, socialized education, that's absolutely fine. If 100% of people agree in that group and they are voluntarily parting with their property in order to achieve that, that's absolutely fine. And we do have this. This isn't some kind of extreme concept. I mean, it's called cooperatives, right? Cooperatives are just essentially a voluntary opt-in form of socialism. That's really what these structures are. You can do that as a company, you can do that as a community, you can do that as some kind of a small autonomous region, however you want to do it. But the key factor is that everybody's consenting to that. So I'm not fundamentally against this. And what I would love to see as an experiment is lots of different cooperatives that all come together and say, okay, we're going to organize this way, we're going to organize this way. But as long as everybody who's partaking in that system is doing it consensually, then it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Let's see in that voluntary system what creates the highest results. And then everyone can compare those results and can say, okay, well, they're doing things really great in this way. Maybe we need to incorporate that. Maybe we need to lose this and we need to pay a bit more towards these things and lose those things. But again, the key is it being consented to? All of this, everything that I'm saying here, it's not about being selfish. It's not about the individual saying, okay, I don't want to pay into any of these things. I just want to see to me and my own and that's it. And I never want to do anything else for other people. And I don't care who's less fortunate than me. That's not what it's about. That's not what it's about. People do have to be in touch with their own compassion for others and say, what are the things that I want to contribute to this world? Who are the people I want to help? Who are the people who are really needy? And I think that people should do that. And actually, I think that when you have extreme socialists who are saying, no, nobody would ever do that. Nobody would ever give to charity if they're not being coerced to do it. We need the government to do it. I think that's a lot of projection, honestly. And actually, that does remind me of someone I used to know. I was telling this story recently, actually, about someone I used to live with who was a self-professed communist. She believed 100% in communism, you know, was not afraid to use that term, etc. And she used to always be buying loads and loads of stuff on Amazon. These packages used to come through the door. It'd be like Christmas every day. You know, there'd be a mountain of packages that had been posted through the door by Amazon. And I would say to her, you know, why are you using Amazon? Why are you buying all this stuff? You know, you're Amazon's biggest customer and you're a communist. How do you square that hole? And she said to me, yeah, but I will live by communist principles when the world is communist. And I think that is completely telling of people who have these ideas. A lot of the time it's projection. A lot of the time, these are the people who they will do whatever society is doing. They won't have a individual ethical principle which they live by. They're waiting for the whole world. They're waiting for some authority to tell them, okay, now everyone's going to live by your ethical principle. And until that moment, they don't have the principle. They won't live by it themselves. And so when people say, yeah, well, you know, in an anarchist world, in a voluntarist world, people aren't going to give charity. People aren't going to help each other out. People aren't going to, you know, give to the needy, etc. I think that's projection. I think that's people who won't do it themselves, and therefore they believe the rest of society won't do it. And just one final point on that. The current system of statism dissuades against that. It dissuades against charity. Everybody feels like they're giving so much that, you know, my taxes are going to do all the work. Well, you know, I'm already having 40% of my wages taken, so I'm not going to give to charity. That's for the government to do. The government's supposed to look after these people. And the government inevitably does not. The government, of course, first of all, misappropriates all of those funds, as we know. But further to that, it actually exonerates the individual from their own responsibility. It disconnects people from something which should be inherent, which is, how can I give back? You know, and that's something that I think naturally exists within all of us. And probably that's why we have such a meaning crisis now, because people have assumed that by having their paycheck cut and receiving only 60% of their income, that they're being charitable, that they're being compassionate, and that that can act as a substitute for individual, personally derived charitable acts. So it actually strips meaning of our lives. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough either. All right, I'm going to leave this episode here. I have rambled a lot on this topic. I hope that you followed it. I hope that there is a thread there for people to listen to. It's super hard doing these episodes when I'm just talking. I'm trying to improve it, and that's why I'm doing it more and more. But I do find it very, very difficult. You know, when you're trying to talk and you don't have inputs and you're just trying to stream consciousness, I find it very hard. But I hope that you've got value from it. This is just to kind of lay out, you know, where my thoughts are on all these things. You know, my politics has changed a lot in the past, and maybe it'll change again. You know, I'm not saying that this is a view that I will hold forever, that, you know, my mind is always open to being changed on any topic, but I always try to look at every single topic from first principles and say, does this align with what I believe to be fundamentally true and right and fair? And that's how I approach this topic. So this is where I am currently. I'd love to hear your thoughts as well. If you've listened this far, thank you. And thank you to Oz for his poem, The Tax Poem, which inspired this episode, despite the fact that I definitely went on a lot of tangents here away from taxation into a lot of the kind of ethical territory. But there you go. All right, let me know your thoughts. Leave me a boost. If you enjoyed this episode, consider sharing it with someone. Always appreciate people getting the word out there. Thank you all for listening, and see you in the next one.